CBS, Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Ukraine crisis. Colonel Jeff McCausland, United States Army, retired, CBS News, Dickinson College, the CEO of Diamond Six Leadership and Strategy. We go immediately to the NATO convening meeting within hours and what is to be done. Notably, NATO right now is looking at increasing its presence throughout the NATO countries. For example, staging battle groups inside Slovakia, Romania, Bulgaria, and Hungary, surrounding, including places in Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia, and more. Jeff, a very good evening to you. You're a veteran of NATO as well as a veteran of the U.S. Army. What we're looking at is staging readying for, well, World War Two and a half is what one colleague of mine calls it. Are you surprised at this sudden deployment? And does it make sense given what we're looking at in Ukraine right now? Good evening to you.
Good evening to you, John. No, I'm not surprised at all. Of course, we saw the precursor of this prior to the onset of hostilities as the United States deployed forces to these countries, which really are the frontline states of NATO, that being the Baltic Republics, Poland, Slovakia, Hungary, Romania, Bulgaria, which border the Russian Federation. And these forces will have really three missions, John. First mission, obviously, to deter the Russians from any thoughts that they could move beyond the borders of the Ukraine if they are, in fact, successful and threaten NATO territory, or perhaps threaten NATO territory, those countries in particular that are key and essential to the resupply to the Ukraine. Second, reassure those countries that NATO and the United States in particular stands behind its commitments. And it's important, obviously, that this is a multilateral approach that many of the principal countries, U.S., Germany, France, and others are involved with. And then lastly, of course, John, a topic I think which will be very, very central to this meeting of NATO leaders, that is the whole humanitarian operation right now, dealing with 3.5 million refugees outside of Ukraine. 2 million of those are now in Poland, almost coming to the point of overwhelming those frontline states because of the number of refugees. And so some of these forces may be diverted to also assist in the humanitarian operations.
Poland is not mentioned here, but Poland is more than the front line. It's facing Belarus. And we know that Belarus took hostile action over these last months by weaponizing immigrants that it was bringing in from Africa and from Central Asia. Poland is not only the front line, but outspoken in its aggression. It's deported a bunch of Russian diplomats, dozens in these last hours, calling them spies. Is Poland another league from the rest of NATO, Jeff, in your experience, because of their historical conflagrations caused by both Germany and Russia?
Certainly the history between Poland and its sad history with Russia, and frankly, sad history of Germany, I think does make it central in this particular regard. Furthermore, its geographic position. Obviously, it is central to the transfer of supplies and military assistance into Ukraine, less so the Baltic Republics don't share a border with the Ukraine, less so with some of the southern European countries. Poland is also one of the largest, of course. They have a military of their own of about 120,000 troops, and it was also the focal point before the onset of hostilities for a lot of deployments of U.S. and other countries' forces to bolster that deterrence mission. And right now, there are somewhere around 10,500 allied forces on Polish territory, including Americans, British, as well as Germans.
We move to the story of what we know about the Russian offensive. The reporting from London, which is all I have, suggests that there's a word retreat is comparable to what we're witnessing, or rotation. That's a polite way of talking about it. There's also buzz, but no confirmation, of Russia looking for other troops. Syria is mentioned. Belarus is mentioned. What does this mean, Jeff? Is it useful to Moscow to misdirect us, or does this sound like they don't have enough troops for what they're trying to achieve?
It's the latter, John. They don't have the troops for what they're trying to achieve. They thought this was going to be a war of annihilation. They would achieve surprise. They would move very quickly. A lot of the Ukrainian forces would evaporate, or even they suggested change sides, and they would move through this very fast. It would be a battle of annihilation. Now, after a month, they're in a battle of attrition, slowly but surely trying to grind this thing out. And over time, what we've seen is significant casualties. John, last Friday, the Pentagon said conservatively 7,000 Russians killed in action. Now we have a Moscow source attributed for a time to the Ministry of Defense that says 10,000 killed in action. And supposedly there's a NATO spokesperson today that said 15,000 killed in action. And obviously there are some multiple then of wounded. Even if it's 2-1, we're talking 20, 30,000 or more wounded. As a consequence, the Pentagon has just said that the percentage of force now deployed against Ukraine, which at the onset of hostilities was about 150,000, has dipped below 90% of that total, meaning many of these units have suffered 10% or more casualties. And we in the U.S. military say if a unit has suffered 10% casualties, it is combat ineffective. You've got to pull it out, resupply it with recruits, integrate them, and then put it back in the battle line or pull it out altogether and put a fresh unit in. And that's what the Russians seem to be trying to deal with, reflected, as you suggest, John, in an effort to recruit outside forces, Syrians, Chechens, Libyans, Africans, and the use of such mercenary groups like the Wagner Group, who may not be used in frontline positions, but all those forces could be used in those areas that the Russians now have occupied to try to control the population, thus freeing up Russian ground troops to try to continue with the offensive.
I report to you from my conversations with three people who are inside Kyiv that there is no attempt to encircle the city to the south or to the east. In fact, all of the action and the tragedies going on to the northwest of the city, and we've seen satellite photos of the Russians deploying their artillery just out in the middle of a field, as if they fear no airstrikes whatsoever. Jeff, what does that tell you about this siege of Kyiv? Are the Russians intending to take the city or distract us?
I think what it tells us, John, is that the Russians still would like to take the city without a doubt, because it's what we call in military parlance a center of gravity. The goal for Russia, for Mr. Putin, was to take down the government and install a government in Ukraine that was more amenable to the direction that Moscow wanted to take. They have been unable to do that. That still remains an objective, so they want to do that. They just can't do that based on the amount of manpower they have and based on the resistance. What may have has transpired, as we look back on this, John, is they tried to invade on multiple axes of advance. Those axes were not well coordinated with central command and control, and they're going in on multiple axes of advance, the south, Kharkiv, the north, etc. They spread their combat power too widely as opposed to a narrow assault simply on the capital. That being said, they are where they are, and consequently, in the days ahead, I think the battle for Kyiv is going to look a lot like the battle for Sarajevo. Don't forget, again, of course, the Serbs were never able to totally encircle Sarajevo during that terrible war, but spent enormous amounts of firepower, artillery, mortars, rockets, etc., in trying to destroy not only the military who were defending the capital, but terrorize the population and break their will.
Colonel, when we started this conversation about the attack on Ukraine, you emphasized to me three elements were necessary. Surprise, the Russians lost it. Speed, not capable. Mass, which is what we're witnessing of the bombardment of large cities, cities with civilian populations. And right now, the bombardment of Kyiv is only partial. However, there was one more element that you mentioned, Riley, at the end of one of our conversations. Weather. What does that mean, Jeff?
Weather means, in particular, old man weather makes his own determination how the battle is going to go. You know, Clausewitz back in the day talked about the friction of war, that all things in war are hard because the environment of combat exacerbates those things. And weather is certainly one of them. And what we're seeing right now is two factors. One, cold weather, apparently dipping below zero at night. Poor logistics by the Russians. We even have reports of Russian soldiers suffering frostbite, which is debilitating not only in terms of producing casualties, but in how it produces morale. Soldiers who are near frozen to death are usually not highly motivated. But in this particular area of eastern Ukraine, they have a thing, it's called the Lutitsa, which basically means the bog. And as we get closer and closer to the spring, as we get closer to 1 April, the ground starts to soften, and then you have massive mud. And for a heavy armor advance like the Russians want to create, that makes things very, very difficult. German army saw the same thing happen as they tried to move into Russia through this area back in 1941 and 1942, confining the heavy armor equipment to the roads, therefore making them more vulnerable to side shots using anti-tank weapons and causing them to consolidate on those road networks. Once they get off the road and try to spread out, obviously then they get stuck in the mud, further slowing the advance.
Colonel Jeff McCausland, CBS News, Dickinson College, the CEO of Diamond Six Leaderships and Strategy. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
It's Cybersecurity Awareness Month. LifeLock is here with tips to help protect your identity. Use strong passwords, set up multi-factor authentication, report scams, and update your software. And for comprehensive identity protection, LifeLock is your best choice. LifeLock alerts you to suspicious uses of your personal information and fixes identity theft, guaranteed, or your money back. Start your protection today with a 30-day free trial at LifeLock.com. Use promo code NEWS. Terms apply.